We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk program. I'm Jeff Bossert. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Our technical director this morning is Jason Croft. On May 1st of this year, it will have marked 60 years since Orestes Mini Minoso became the first African-American to play Major League Baseball in Chicago. In 1949, he became the first Black Latino in the major leagues. Tonight at 7, as part of a week's worth of events commemorating Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Minoso will be on the University of Illinois' Urbana campus. Tonight's Fireside Chat will also feature documentary filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz, who screened his film Roberto Clemente last night, and Cubs outfielder Fernando Perez, who represents the modern baseball era. The event will be at the U of I's Alice Campbell Alumni Center. It's free, beginning at 7. We'll hear from all three guests this hour. I pre-recorded an interview with Minoso earlier this week, the longtime White Sox outfielder. I'll discuss him more in a moment. Joining me in the studio for this hour is Bernardo Ruiz, the writer, producer, and director of the PBS documentary Roberto Clemente. It aired in 2008 as part of the American Experience series. Ruiz's film earned the Alma Award for Outstanding Made-for-Television Documentary. He's directed several programs for PBS, MTV, and Discovery, and other cable networks. He's also the founder of Quiet Pictures, a production company that aims to create innovative and socially conscious media across all platforms. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with me is Fernando Perez, an outfielder formerly with the Tampa Bay Rays, having been drafted by the team in 2004, earning their Minor League Player of the Year honors in 2008. He saw a little playing time with the Rays in 08, scoring the winning run of Game 2 in the American League Championship Series against Boston. He also stole a base against the Philadelphia Phillies in the World Series. He spent last season with the AAA Durham Bulls. He was recently dealt to the Cubs in a trade which the team also acquired a pitcher, Matt Garza. And Mr. Perez is also a writer. He studied American Studies at Columbia University and also studied creative writing. The New Jersey native published 2 essays and continues to find time to write while keeping up his baseball career. Mr. Perez, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So what I've decided to do today is split up the interview with Mini Minoso into different portions. I had not anticipated that Mini Minoso would be so long-winded when I called him, and I figured, okay, we'll probably have 15, 20 minutes to reflect on his career. He talked to me for about an hour the other day, so we obviously don't have the time for all of that. We're going to play back portions of that, and then the two of you can talk about that as well as your own careers. So, and I will point out that Minoso's accent is thick, and there were times that I didn't get through everything he was telling me, but I think I pulled out some segments of the interview that we'll all enjoy. We welcome your calls for our guest today, in studio guest Bernardo Ruiz, the filmmaker and ballplayer Fernando Perez, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Before we get to some recorded portions of Mini Minoso, talk about your visit to campus this week. Bernardo, maybe you could talk a bit about – there were a lot of things about Roberto Clemente I did not know until watching your film. You had a screening last night. Talk about that experience.
Sure. And just before I talk about the film, I just want to say that at 86, Mini Minoso is probably a better athlete than I'll ever be. So there's a reason why I make documentaries and that I'm behind the camera. So I'm really thrilled and excited to see Mini, who's baseball royalty and a kind of legend in my mind. I was really excited to screen the film. It was a real privilege to be able to put this film together. One of the most exciting things was to scour through hours of archival footage of Clemente playing and to spend a lot of time in Puerto Rico, where Clemente was born, in the city of Carolina, and interview people who were very close to him and whose life he kind of changed. And I think it's kind of a real treat to be here with Mini, who represents kind of one bookend of a really fascinating history, and then to have Fernando, who's sitting right next to me, and represents the kind of the other end of the spectrum, on the other end of kind of baseball history. So without putting too much on him and putting him on the spot, I think that it says a lot about the kind of history of baseball, the history of Latinos in baseball. Now Latinos is the largest minority within the game. It's now taken for granted that Latinos are integral and part of the game. But as we know through history and as my film shows and as Roberto Clemente's career shows, that wasn't always the case.
And I do want to point out that this film is available to watch online. I can't remember the exact website, but it's a PBS American Experience through WGBH.
Sure.
Obviously, you can purchase the DVD through there as well. Okay, no pressure, Fernando, but you want to talk a bit about maybe briefly about your career, how you got started with the game of baseball?
I grew up in Princeton Junction, New Jersey, and I played played lots of sports and pretty indiscriminately. I wasn't really pushed to do one over the other really at all. Baseball sort of became big, I think, as a result of the infrastructure just already being there. The fields were already there. Our parents had already loved it. It had been, to me, it was still, the NFL, I don't think, was quite as important quite then in the early 90s. So baseball was just kind of the easy choice for your kids. So I had always played. I live, actually, my parents live next to a Little League field. So being around the game, I was just around the game very casually. Right after, getting home from school, finishing my homework, I would ride my bike to the Little League field, watch games. We would announce games. They would let us up into the announcing booth and announce, the Little League games and stuff. So I've always been around baseball and always knew I'd be around baseball, but I played some other sports, probably more seriously, especially soccer, growing up. But baseball had always been there. My parents, coming from Cuba, are huge baseball fans. My grandfather, if he would be alive and would have gotten to see myself shake Minnie Minoso's hand, I'm sure it would have been very, very powerful for him. That's my baseball story.
Okay. Well, we will talk much more about each of your careers. Why don't we get started with go back to the late 40s. Cuban native Minnie Minoso had worked in sugar fields a few months out of the year. By the time he was 13 or 14 years old, he told me he went to live with his sisters in Havana and started to play amateur baseball for a cigar factory team and worked part-time at the factory making cigars. He went to the Oriente province to play for the Cuban miners. We also talked about how he gives 100% to the game of baseball during his whole career, learned how to respect it and everything he had. He told me, and you never talk back to people when you're on the field. They can call you any kind of name you want. You're essentially a clown out there, and the best thing you can do is smile. Alejandro Pascal, who had signed a lot of ballplayers in the late 40s, had taken Minoso to a hotel to talk about offering his first contract. But Minoso told me money wasn't his main motivation. Here we have about 3 minutes of Minoso negotiating the contract to play for the New York Cubans.
So after the game, Pascal took me to the Prado Hotel, and he wanted to talk to me. I said, okay. He offered me $30,000. And in 1944-45, okay, and I said, no, Pascal, the money was not everything to me. I'm going to go to the United States. And I came to the United States with a New York Cuban for $150 a month. And I refused $30,000 for 6 months. So, and I said to myself, when I had to compare this with my people that I used to work in a Pactagar, because before I used to work there when I was no professional yet. So I wanted they remember that I remember them, because they helped me a lot when I was a rookie over there with the team. So I wanted what I put the table, the card on the table in the factory. And I said, guy, I'm here because I need your decision. and I want you to know that I remember you, I love you. One to go to the United States and one to go to Mexico. They offered me some money in Mexico and some money in the United States. So I want you that, I don't tell exactly how much it was, you know, but I want you to help me to make a decision. In the end, I'm going to tell you what decision I would. And the right guy, the guy who really, and the cigar factory, they really couple hour every day to the employee. They really said, okay, ladies and gentlemen, Oreste Minoso, okay, to Mexico. Not many people probably much. They say, United States, oh, everybody, you know, the clap, you know. They do again. And then the United States won. And I said, okay, guys, thank you to help me. I'm going to go to the United States. I play for New York Cuba. And the guy who signed me there in Cuba, we should be Alex Fernandez, Joe Fernandez. And he said, okay, Oreste wanted to come up. You talk to him about the money. I know Pascal gave you $30,000 to go over there, but we don't have this kind of money. And Pompey, maybe only thing I can offer you, that's about $150 to $200 a month and $5 a day for eat. I said, okay, I work with Pompey, come up. Pompey come up, and they talk, and he said, look, don't say anything, we're going to give you $300. If you say $150, I'll give you $300, and $5 a day for eat. Don't say anything to the rest of the guy, and everything's okay. I said, okay. And I went to New York, Cuba, and I played my first year, second year, played 4 years there.
All right, that was Orestes Mini Minoso talking about negotiating his first contract with the in professional baseball, playing for the New York Cubans, Negro League team. But this is where he got his start. He turned down, as he said, a much larger contract because money wasn't the real object. He wanted to play in the U.S. And Bernardo, I thought maybe you could talk about what we just heard, that story, and some of the things that maybe the early experiences that Roberto Clemente had in Puerto Rico and the mix of players and that experience. It was just a haven for him once he was able to play.
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing that's so fascinating about that is the money. The second that Mini talked about making $150 a month, you know, Fernando and I looked at each other. I mean, you think about how money has changed in baseball, how dramatic that shift has been. And it really, you know, really makes you think about how much this game has changed. When Clemente was signed, he was signed for the Brooklyn Dodgers in '54. His initial contract was for $5,000 plus a $10,000 signing bonus, $15,000. It's a different game in baseball. I think what's the minimum salary right now for an MLB player?
It's over $400,000. It's a lot.
I have to admit that because you're mentioning this, I know that there is Fernando, you were part of an online video, I suppose we can find on YouTube or somewhere else that kind of parodies the starting salary for a big league ball player today, ridiculing the salaries that A-Rod and some of the mega stars make and you know, how everyone else is struggling at $400,000.
I think it's ridiculing anybody who thinks that that is a struggle. I think it's ridiculing a lot of things. And in the end, it's sort of ridiculing me since I only made the minimum once.
So, I think Fernando has a great sense of humor about it. But, you know, it does point to a kind of more important issue, which is, you know, how the game has changed and how we think about some of these early players and their contributions. I mean, someone like Mini, whose career spans multiple decades, who, you know, played in every conceivable game, every type of game, played in Latin America, played in the U.S. You think about these guys and many of them not getting their due. It really kind of makes you reconsider the game. Clemente is a really kind of exceptional story and an unusual story, and there's a reason why I think he's such an icon for a lot of people. You know, he grew up watching Negro League players in San Juan in Puerto Rico, where he was born. His childhood hero was Monty Irvin. And he really began to kind of build an image of himself or an identity by watching these black players who were playing in the Caribbean. Once he left and began his own major league career, he was kind of thrust into Jim Crow and a segregated nation. Clemente's career spans the period of civil rights in our country. Clemente played from 55 to 72, 18 years with the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's another anomaly. You just don't see that anymore. You don't see players staying with one team over a long period of time. So there are just a lot of things about his story that I think tell us, show us how baseball has changed so much.
I want to mention our guests again and welcome calls for them. We're talking with filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz, the writer, producer, and director of the PBS documentary Roberto Clemente, and Cubs ballplayer Fernando Perez, former Tampa Bay Ray outfielder, now traded to the Cubs and looking forward to spring training with a great anticipation, I'm sure, this year. Welcome your calls and questions, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. What you were just talking about, Bernardo, will segue nicely into the next portion I want to play in my pre-recorded interview with Manny Minoso. And again, if you want to hear Minoso speak as well as our in-studio guests, there's a free event tonight at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center on the U of I campus beginning at 7. Where we left off, we were talking about Minoso negotiating his first contract. He went to spring training with the Indians in 1949. Played a few games and then sent back to the San Diego Padres minor league team. That was the team, that was a minor league team, and the big league club was neighbor later named the Padres after that team. He was upset. He was told that he'd be in the big leagues for sure, though, and then within the next year. Moving to the 1951 spring training, he started playing some first base. This was the first time he'd had any real discussion in the interview about race, because later, shortly after that time in the season, he learned he was going to be traded to the White Sox. And in the last portion of this interview, something that was brought up a lot in his book, Just Call Me Minnie, if you want to hear read a lot more about Minoso's career. But he discussed a meeting with a teammate as he was about to be traded by Cleveland. This is more Minnie Minoso.
To me, that's not making a difference. I'm this way. I'm a black person. No matter where I come from, my skin is black. And this is what I don't understand. Afro, you know, black. I said, what do you mean? I'm black. I'm as black as anybody else. Two races to me. There was a black and white. And I respect the love of both. That's not me. Because if you are born in Cuba, my skin is not changed. I'm black. And I live here in the United States. What's a black and white? A lot of people said, no, you know, you're born in Cuba. So what different? And I said, look, if you have two people, one black and one white, well, maybe about a half a block away from you, they work it to you, you have to describe, what did you say? You said, one black and one white. I said, this is the same way. No matter where you born, where you came from, you might be a different country, maybe a different town. Why are you going to call somebody born in San Francisco and somebody born in Chicago? After what? Do you hear me?
Yes.
After what? That the black people are making a difference. Okay. This is the way my father and mother teach me. How to respect and love everyone. No make any difference what color, what race, or what position. If you have one penny, I'm going along with one penny. I'm not going to rescue anybody or hit anybody because I want to take anything away from this since I was kid. And this is the way I came to Chicago. I'm not afraid. I was to do one thing. So the ball game was over. We get in a train. We travel overnight in a train. I lock in my room, and I don't open the door to nobody. And I was quiet inside over there because I said, well, I don't know how to speak it. My baseball career is over, so gee, where I play this bad. So anyway, One guy knocked the door in my room. And you know who it is?
Who is that?
I bet you never gonna, I'm gonna tell you. Ray Boone. Ray Boone, he used to be utility like me, play shortstop.
Yeah, part of the famous baseball family.
You're absolutely right. A great person, too. I love it. He knocked at the door. He said, Minnie, that's me. Boom. Said, I opened the door. He said, what are you crying about? I said, look, Ray, you don't know. See, like in my whole life, I go to one place, I don't know anybody. And here, I know a lot of people. Everybody know me. And in team, they helping me if you have. They need to say something, and they need it. They helping me to do other things, to speak, and I, you know, I feel very comfortable here. Over there, I don't know anybody, and I don't know are they gonna accept me or not. You know what he said? Look a minute. By that time, you know how I mean. He said, Minoso, you're gonna be one of the great ball players in the league. You're gonna enjoy it, and you're gonna have a many, many great years because you have a lot of heart.
Minnie Minoso talking about, in the last portion there, a heart-to-heart discussion with Ray Boone, one of his, at the time, a teammate with the Cleveland Indians. And, of course, Boone was right. He had this phenomenal career with the White Sox. Either of my guests want to react to what we've just heard or... Renato, maybe you can relate to what you learned in your research about Roberto Clemente.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Minnie's talking about in that clip is the kind of the context that black Latino players or black players from Latin America were thrust into when they came to this country. Now, it's not that racism didn't exist in the Caribbean or doesn't exist in the Caribbean and Latin America, but certainly, black Latin American players were thrust into a very different set of circumstances here. And often what they had to do was play this game where they had to choose or make these choices based on their identity. So they were treated as black Americans. They were treated as foreigners. There wasn't this idea in the mid-50s in our country that you could be both of African descent and Latin American. When you think about that and you unpack that, it seems sort of preposterous. During the kind of terrible chapter of slavery, we know that 10 times as many Africans came to Latin America, to the Iberian, to the Spanish and Portuguese colonies as they did to North America. So there's always been a very strong and big African presence historically in Latin America. And in some ways, Latin America just has a different relationship to race. And it's not that racism is non-existent, not at all, but it's just there's a very different conception of race in Latin America. So these young players coming into this segregated system were faced with these new rules that they weren't used to. And I think what Minnie's talking about is confronting that in a way. We're still, from in my opinion, this is just my perspective, we haven't moved away from that entirely, but now we're in an era where the majority of minorities in the game are Latinos. We have a different conception of that. We're more comfortable with an idea of Afro Latinos or Black Latinos in the game. But not speaking as an insider, I don't know how much it's changed and how much perceptions have changed.
Well, for me, just the image of Minnie being in a hotel room is a really, really powerful image and something that I think, that's something that I saw plenty of, especially coming up. I mean, now we've been talking about how much the game has changed when you've got players that are in the major leagues. It's a lot easier for them, just by themselves, virtue of, the money and resources that they've got around to kind of be a lot more comfortable, even if they don't speak any English at all. But the minor leagues is a totally, totally, totally different story. As you know, the more concessions that the major league players receive to make it easier for players that have already made, in excess of $1 million, say, for things to get easier for them, it has to get harder on the minor league guys. It's just kind of the the reality of the collective bargaining agreements. So that scene of a Latin player, hidden in his room, is still, a scene that I think that you could see in 2010, especially depending on how many other Latin players there are, and if there happens to be sort of that if they're lucky enough to have a guy that is bilingual that cares somewhat to sort of help them out.
And one thing that makes me think of are the youth leagues, are the baseball camps in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, where it's in some ways, someone really needs to make a kind of hoop dreams about the young ball players in the Caribbean and Latin America, who are, in some ways playing for a visa. I mean, these kids are working really hard to get a shot to come to the bigs, to come to the United States, oftentimes with the pressure of supporting their families and their communities on their backs. And, what happens if they don't make it, or the ones that do make it come and have that same experience of being alone and not having a lot of support, not having a lot of friends or even basic cultural support. So I think that Minnie's experience, although time specific, still speaks to the realities of certain players today. There's a very beautiful film that came out a few years ago called Sugar, about a Black Caribbean player from the Dominican Republic who comes to play in a minor league team and kind of looks at the his experiences throughout that that period. And I think that film does a great job of highlighting that same loneliness that that Minnie's talking about.
Well, it just so happens, since we're talking about a legendary White Sox player, the discussion in the last couple of minutes made me think of what Ozzie Guillen, the manager, said in the last year. Mm-hmm. You have Japanese players and it's well publicized that they have a translator sitting next to them, someone like Kosuke Fukudome or Ichiro Suzuki, whereas often the translator for a Latino player is maybe, happens to be a bilingual coach or another player, yeah. But they don't get to hire a translator.
Yeah, well, I think that those statements, I thought they were very complicated, and of course, once we got them, they were taken out of context, and for the most part, sort of skewed by people that didn't like the statements to begin with. But the going back and hearing what he actually said, I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. I think a lot of it, some of it, were just circumstances. Japanese players, for whatever reason, they have some more bargaining power when they're negotiating a contract. There's not going to be Japanese players, they're coming from the major leagues over there. They're not going to just show up here with nobody. I think that there's this sort of idea that, lots of people speak Spanish. It'll get taken care of. Or you'll just be able to learn. There's plenty of truth to it. I think that the infrastructure for Latin players to be more comfortable and to be helped along, their assimilation, to learn English, to better represent themselves in the media and to appear more human to their fan base. I mean, I think that that is something that's definitely lacking, and that is the root of Ozzie's statements. It's just that the way, Ozzie, he just says it in a way in which he doesn't really care if you misconstrue it or not, because he believes in what he's saying. And the shame is that there aren't enough people that just want to portray, once he says something, that want to portray it in a way to expose the actual goodness and the things that are worth talking about and worth being in the argument, as opposed to people that just want to say, oh, he said another crazy thing. What a crazy man.
We're talking with Cubs outfielder Fernando Perez and filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz. We welcome your questions and calls about the Latino integration of baseball, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Bernardo, something you had said, talking a little bit about Roberto Clemente, is another thing I learned from your film is what a serious man he became. And once he went to play for the Pirates and suffered from insomnia, and I don't know if it was a combination of things, but reporters were really, and I think beyond the language barrier, were really apprehensive about approaching him for interviews.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that was really fun in doing the research for the film was to go back and look at the coverage, the written coverage of Clemente at the time, and to listen to the radio interviews. And, you know, Clemente had different relationships with the press, but one of his major sticking points, one of the things that really drove him crazy, is that he would be written out phonetically in almost in this clownish or comical way, and it really irked him. He would, you know, his point was always that, you know, if a Southern player or another white player with a regional American accent was quoted, he would never be written out phonetically, but he seemed to be singled out at the time in a way that felt very mocking to him. So he's very distrustful, for the most part, of the kind of written press. However, he did have a different kind of relationship with Bob Prince, the radio and television announcer. And it's with Bob Prince that Clemente kind of made history for Latinos in the game. And I think it's a kind of watershed moment culturally. And that's in the 72 series when he decided to speak in Spanish. He took a brief moment after this major win to speak in Spanish to his family in Puerto Rico. And for a lot of the people that I interviewed in the film, a lot of the people interviewed in David Marinus's very fine biography of Clemente, those people, for them, it was the first time that they heard Spanish coming across the English language airwaves, across the television and radio airwaves. So that's a kind of special and unique moment, and that represented the kind of the relationship that Clemente had with Bob Prince.
What was so completely eerie is too is I wasn't aware of how he had thoughts about his own mortality. He lost his sister when he was just an infant, and it accomplished so much by that point. He'd become this hero and put the team, you know, right on my shoulders. He was essentially a team captain and put up amazing numbers and shortly just before his death.
I mean, one of the things about Clemente is that spiritual side. And again, this is one of the reasons it was such a rich storytelling opportunity. You know, there had been a few other projects that had examined Clemente's baseball triumphs on the field. And I was definitely interested in looking at his kind of connection to spiritual life, his humanitarian efforts, his increasing radicalization politically. That makes him such an interesting person. And I think the thing about Clemente that's always kind of bittersweet is that his life was cut short at 38. He's a very young man. Even though his baseball career was most likely winding down, he probably had a few good years in him given his physical condition. But you have to wonder what type of statesman he might have been, what type of person he might have been. He was a kind of cultural bridge already between Black and Latino communities in this country, and a link between the U.S. and Latin America. And you have to wonder what types of things he could have accomplished. I really think that he would have been a force to be reckoned with politically.
And if you want to hear more about this discussion, we've got just under 20 minutes left here. Please come to the Alice Campbell Alumni Center at the U of I campus tonight. It's free, a fireside chat led by history professor Adrian Burgos, who we want to thank for getting this all arranged. We'll have Minnie Minoso here on the campus tonight, along with our guests in studio, Fernando Perez and Bernardo Ruiz. Fernando, is it true that we're talking about, Latino integration of baseball? Are you the only Ivy League graduate with a Latino name to it who played in the big leagues?
Yeah.
That's
and I remember when I saw it, I think the first time that I realized it was in Yankee Stadium, and it flashed on the Jumbotron, and I thought, wow, it feels like it should have happened a while ago.
Well, and I believe
that's what I thought. I didn't think, you know, wow, I'm so neat. I thought, wow, that I was pretty shocked that it hadn't already happened. Latin players being obviously so great at baseball, and so much time going by since Lou Gehrig. But you know, what can you do?
And I believe, at least at the time he played, recently retired former Cubs outfielder Doug Glanville is the only African-American Ivy League graduate mm-hmm. to have, because he said that in his book, which by the way, is The Game from Where I Stand, a terrific book that just came out last year. Let's listen to some more Minnie Minoso. We've just got a couple of segments left, and they're a little bit shorter. I moved on here to his first game. It was May 1st of 1951, we're just shy of that 60th anniversary of Chicago or Minoso breaking the color line in Chicago. We pick up a conversation discussing his first at bat with the White Sox.
And how did I get up there the first time I hit a home run? First time, first pitch, I hit a home run, and number 19, Big Ratchet, over a bullpen up there, still having the baseball. And this is the way I started. And this is the way I'm going to die. With an organization that I love it, and the city I love it, Chicago.
And that first game, too, I think Mickey Mantle hit his first home run on the same day.
He a rookie, too. And I hit it, but it's really funny. I hit it the first home run there in Chicago, and one that I used to have in Cleveland when I came, there's two. I thought, well, it's never going to keep me, but keep Mickey Mantle hit it one after I hit it mine, and the third in, I think he do it. But he hit a 600-something home run, I only hit a 180 or 200 for my whole baseball career. So I cannot keep it out here. He kicked me.
Minnie Minoso discussing hitting a home run in his first White Sox at bat, and what a piece of history there. Mickey Mantle hits his first big league homer of the same game. We got a call on line one. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm from the St. Louis area, so I guess I'm a baseball fan by proxy. I don't really follow it, but I'm interested in the dynamics of the immigrant experience, I guess, and the color line and Latinos. I attended the Adrian Burgos talk at the University of Hawaii, and I'm noticing that it's available. People can screen that on the web if they go to University of Hawaii. I'm safe right for them. So, and it's full of a lot of good stuff. And one of the things that I remember that's been sort of pointed at, that he said very explicitly, was that basically Latino ballplayers were just like any other Latino workers. They were the low wagers. You know, they came in. You mentioned, you know, they wanted a visa. They want that, that's still extant to this day. So I don't know. I just thought that was worthy enough of a reprise. I mean, it's sports is part of everything else, and it's part of that whole the whole phenomenon of an ethnically defined lower class. But the dynamics that he also talked about is similar because. As Clemente said, Minoso said earlier, people were saying that he wasn't black. I mean, because you know, they were defining him as other, but other as Latino, so that they could still use his great playing. I don't know. I just like for some reaction, I suppose. But people can see that talk, and it's well worth their attention. If they're he's a Yankees fan, I'll have to though point out. So. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the one thing that comment makes me think about is the progress on the one hand we've made about how we think about race and identity and culture in this country, and then the challenges that we have. You know, on the one hand, we have a president who is biracial, who is African American, who's mixed, and so maybe on that level we have some level of comfort or understanding about race. But I think certain things. Certain challenges in other parts of the country. You look at what I consider to be a pretty regressive law in Arizona, SB 1070, which seeks to, go after immigrants. There are still pockets of deep challenges in this country in the way we think about and deal with Latin American immigrants, whether they're of African descent or not. And I think that, you know, we've come a long way in some ways. And yet there's still a kind of a deep understanding of our kind of shared relationship.
We got about just under 15 minutes left. You can call at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We also have an email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Wanted to ask Fernando, our pro ball player in the studio, you're also a writer. And whereas you – and I guess this is a very naive point of view, but you would expect a lot of ball players when they move on to maybe coach at a high school or college or maybe try to be a broadcaster. I would assume that you would like to – you're writing now on the side. I would assume you'd like to resume that on a full-time basis when your playing days are over.
Yeah, I mean, the writing, it's just been something that I've done. I mean, ever since high school, and I was writing, really bad poems and stuff. I went to college and I studied short prose, and it was really, my favorite thing to do a lot because those classes were at night, so I would almost certainly be awake with my, a really, really rough schedule of playing a Division I sport. Playing a Division I sport nowadays is very, very difficult. It's essentially year round. The hours are unbelievable, especially when you go to a school that they don't quite. I know somebody out there is going to be mad at me for saying this, but they don't quite respect sports so much. So the facilities aren't so great, so it's pretty rough to play at Columbia, as silly as that sounds. But I had something that I had always been interested in, and something that has sort of followed me. I haven't really tried to force myself into staying into writing. It just kind of continued to come. It's difficult at times to continue the two. I mean, there are points in which just, nothing's coming, and there are just points in which the season or training for the season is particularly grueling, and it's there's really nothing that you can do. You're just sort of a caveman. I mean, there are points in the season where I feel like I can't even read. I'm just too tired or too wound up. But it's something that, I would like to continue to do and struggle to do simultaneously. I mean, it's certainly a struggle. I certainly don't produce at the volume of professional writers because I have a day job.
Any chance wherever you're playing, the Chicago or AAA this season, we might see a blog start up or something? Or is that maybe just looking a little too far ahead and you're focused on?
Yeah, it's looking far ahead. I also there's other things that I'm working on. I think that a blog would perhaps take away from it, but you never know. That could change.
How did you feel about being traded? I don't think I've ever had the chance to ask a ball player that before.
It was a series of very interesting conversations. The Dan Feinstein with the Rays called me in the morning, and once I missed the call once I called him back. I mean, every time I have a call from a 727 area code, a Tampa area code, I'm just assuming that, I'm finally getting traded. This is the day. And it's never that, but this time it actually happened to be. So when I talked to Dan, he had that sort of little bit of a awkward voice where he, you could tell he was about to tell me something. And I could tell that this certainly wasn't a call that he wanted to make. So I, jokingly said, "You must be calling to, discuss my multi-year deal." He says, "No, sir. you're probably going to be traded to the Cubs later today." And it's a weird feeling. You certainly feel, I don't know, I think you feel sort of like like someone broke up with you. You feel like there's something that you could have done. I mean, it certainly wasn't the feeling that, Matt Garza had or Carl Crawford had, where they literally outgrew the business model of the Rays. It's a feeling like that. Plenty of sentimentality. I've had a great time over there. It's all I knew. A lot of people helped me out a lot over there. And, I grew up over there. Like, the beginning of baseball is a lot like college. You just sort of you enter this thing that you are sort of confused about. You're sort of hiding from the outside world, and everything is very, very similar for the first couple of years. But then there's some changeover. You get to Double A, half the guys don't make it. You get to Triple A, only about two or three guys are there, and there's a whole bunch of older players that are pissed about being there. And everything changes. I had a lot of really wonderful experiences over there. But I'm definitely looking forward to this new opportunity.
Well, you played in the postseason. You played in the most successful season in Rays history.
Yeah.
And that had to be – I mean, there's a terrific shot. I believe – I think it was the New York Times, a photo of you, like, leaping out of the dugout. I don't know if it was a big win or when you clinched the postseason.
Yeah, it was it's a really interesting photo because it doesn't really make any sense at all when you look at it. It's just a wonderful photo. It's just a great – time. And essentially, Game 7 that Matt Garza pitched and won against the Red Sox, I was kind of transferring all of my nervousness and anxiety into a baseball that I was rubbing, you know, all game long. And once we won, the baseball was just this important thing to me that, you know, I still have. And I rushed to put it somewhere for safekeeping before I ran out onto the field for the celebration. I guess the photo caught that. So it's just a funny photo. But everything about that whole experience was funny. I mean, I was I got called up earlier that year, and one thing led to another. The first it was just getting onto the field, then it was getting a hit, and then a big hit and a home run, and all of, you know, everything was just, you know, just more and more and more icing on the cake. I mean, I was really just happy to be there. It was really a great experience. It was just sort of that old Little League kid in a candy store feeling. It was great.
Ever been timed in the 100-meter dash? I'm getting the idea that speed is your biggest asset.
Speed is my biggest asset. I've never been timed in the 100. I ran track for about a week or so, and that was the end of it. I'm fast. Yes.
Well, let's listen to our last chunk of Mini Minoso audio here in the last few minutes of the show. He's talking about somewhat of a novelty thing, but he played in 5 decades in the majors, and I guess it's 6 if you include or I'm losing count. I believe it was 6 when he came to bat with the St. Paul Saints minor leagues team in the 90s. So there's a couple more minutes of Mini Minoso.
You got to play in several decades. You had come to bat maybe just a couple of times back, like into the 70s when you returned and put on a White Sox uniform.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of that was Bill Veeck, right, being able to bring you back a couple of times?
Well, it's my Veeck's son. And he in the big league, he's Veeck. I played with Veeck here, too. So he was he's one of my right-hand man. And besides that, I want to tell you, I'm lucky because we have one of the greatest men you ever see him in baseball and business, Mr. Randolph. Jerry Randolph, the owner of the White Sox. You hear me, right?
Yes, yeah.
Well, I want you to say it. I want you to hear it there. I want the people to know this is one of the best men you ever can see. He humility. He have a good heart. He care for everybody. He love and respect every employee. They don't look at you like employer. He and Eddie, they look at you like a family. That's what they concern me. Minnie, you are family. And I just said, you're my family too. And I want to get that opportunity you give me to give my love and my respect to everyone who belong to the White Sox organization from the ground keep, from the office, everyone in the team, and everyone have a part of the team. And my name, and my family name, my wife, and my kid. We love and respect everyone in the organization.
Mini Minoso, who will be part of an event tonight at the University of Illinois campus, free event at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center. And any final thoughts from our guests? We have Cubs outfielder Fernando Perez and filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz. Bernardo, anything else you want to add about tonight or what we've been discussing this morning?
I'm just really excited to be a part of this process, you know, as both a fan and as someone who gets to chronicle these stories. It's thrilling to be able to, to be able to meet Minnie this evening. I'm really looking forward to that. And it's really exciting to hear Fernando's story. I'm really, really looking forward to see what he's going to do with the Cubs. And I'm really looking forward to seeing, hearing and reading what he's going to write, because I think that he represents something unique in baseball. And that's someone who can play hard but can also chronicle the game in an interesting way. So I'm looking forward to that.
Fernando, will you possibly be then a frequent interview? Has that happened in the minors? Articulate in the written word, does that translate? Are you a person who enjoys the media interviews?
At times, you know. For me, I grow tired of speaking about what I'm possibly going to do the next year or the next day on the baseball field. In general, I would love for reporting to kind of move away from that and capture the game a little bit more creatively. I think it would be good for everyone. Interviews like this, wonderful. I love talking about, other things, other people in general. But I make myself available for all sorts of things like that. I love that I'm getting involved with, baseball scholarship, which is just really, really interesting for me since, growing up, I just played so many sports and you know, the way that, you know, these young kind of kids are just sort of irreverent. And so I'm catching up.
I want to thank our guests. We'll thank Manny Minoso, although he joined us by phone. We will hear from him tonight at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, part of the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration this entire week in the community. Pioneering Latinos, building a legacy on and beyond the playing field. Filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
And Fernando Perez, best of luck in spring training.
Thanks.
All right, tonight at 7 o'clock, Alice Campbell Alumni Center, Pioneering Latinos, building a legacy on and off the playing field.